Good afternoon. I wanted to welcome everybody to House Finance. Today is Monday, May 8th, and it is about 1:33 p.m. And we present are Representative Wilson, Representative Vice Chair Guerra, Representative Tilton, Representative Graham, Representative Thompson, myself, Co-Chair Seaton, Representative Guttenberg, Foster, and Ortiz are excused today. And before we start, I'll remind everybody about their cell phones. And at this meeting, we will be having a presentation from Adam Bryan, Capital Budget Coordinator from the Office of Management Budget. And online, we have a couple other presenters that will identify themselves when it's their turn. And they will be speaking on later slides in the presentation. Is there any business come before the committee? Seeing none, then I'd like to ask you to come up forward. And for the people that are online, after you've introduced yourself, if people are changing testifier, just say your name so that we get it right in the record as who's answering. And so, welcome. Would you go ahead and put yourself on the record and proceed with your presentation?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Adam Bryan. I'm the Capital Budget Coordinator in the Office of Management and Budget, here to present an overview of deferred maintenance. So start off with slide two. Quick kind of easy definition of deferred maintenance is maintenance that is postponed due to a lack of resources. And typical items might be replacement of building components as they reach the end of their useful life. Deferred maintenance projects are mostly items that entities cannot address through their preventative maintenance program. So preventative maintenance is equipment that's repaired or serviced before that equipment fails. Each department or entity has a separate preventative maintenance management. They do those independently. The legislature appropriates for preventative maintenance annually in the operating budget. If you recall, in your operating subcommittees, there are allocations that talk to facilities management or facilities maintenance. Those are maintenance professionals in those departments actively taking care of equipment or facilities. We also have an example of the public building fund, which is utilized by the Department of Administration as a way to charge agencies the cost of occupying a state facility.
And before you go on, is there a distinction then between maintenance and preventative maintenance? Is maintenance funded for things that have already broken, or are they used pretty much interchangeably?
They could be interchangeable. Really, a deferred maintenance project would be something that can't be absorbed in an operating budget, so it may exceed the cost that's there. Or it could be outside of the expertise that a department has on staff to accomplish.
Okay, thank you. And we've been joined by Representative Pruitt, Representative Guerra.
Thanks. I'm sure this question will come up later. Probably deferred maintenance is probably not defined as like that level where now things are going to become more expensive because you're causing more damage. But is there a way to identify the points where you've put off your deferred maintenance so much that now you're costing yourself more money over the long run because a leaking roof has damaged the internal parts of a building, things like that?
Right, that's a good example through the chair, Representative Guerra. So a preventative maintenance might notice that you have a leak in your roof, so you patch it. If you don't patch it, kind of the underlying structure of the roof may rot, and you'll accelerate the need to replace the roof or replace the facility based on what kind of level of damage is there. But as in like a metric to know, probably rather subjective.
And Representative Wilson?
Okay, slide three. Just a quick look at an overview of how many facilities the state maintains. So we have over 2,200 facilities statewide, and they encompass 14 entities with the University of Alaska and the court system. It's approximately 19 million square feet of space, and the combined replacement value is $8.6 billion. So a quick chart there looks at the number of facilities by entity. You can see by count, Department of Transportation and Public Facilities is at the top with 645, followed by the university at 426, and that kind of cascades down from there.
And for the committee, what I'd like to do is, if there's any questions or clarifications, questions, let's get those. If there's questions, diving deeply into the subject matter, let's hold those to the end. But was there a clarification question, yeah. Representative Pruitt?
I just want to make sure these are all, the 2,200 are owned facilities. These are not leased facilities or others that we might have to pay for just because of the lease.
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, that's correct. It's just those that are owned, not leased.
Okay. Thank you.
Moving on to slide four, what do our facilities look like at a glance? So the types of facilities that we own vary by the department that owns them or the mission of a department that's utilizing that facility. So DOA mostly manages our general office space. Department of Corrections and Health and Social Services both have 24-hour facilities in corrections, juvenile detention centers, pioneer homes. The Department of Military and Veterans Affairs manages base facilities and armories statewide. DNR has the parks, shelters, fire suppression, and preparedness shops across the state. So a chart here looking at the total square feet by entity of those facilities that we own. The university is the highest with roughly 8 million square feet, and then there's a pretty large drop off to the number two of DOT, who's right above 2 million. So there's a good visual here is to kind of compare slide three, where we look at count, DOT at the highest, and university at the second, to the space that they have. And you can make this comparison for other departments on here, but the mission of an entity directly relates to kind of the overall square footage that they need to promote that mission. So university has campuses where they have institutions where they teach or research. DOT has a mix of maintenance stations for their road maintenance that they have. So different missions there.
Representative Wilson.
So I'm sorry, I still don't understand how DOT has the most and then goes down to second when we're just talking about the types that they are. So can you again explain why? Is it just because the square footage is bigger at the university versus how many buildings they have?
Yes, through the chair, that's correct. One is just a unique count, so how many physical buildings are there, and the other one is how much space do those buildings take up?
Thank
that's
you.
What we're looking at.
Representative Grant had a question.
Sure, thank you, Mr. Kutcher. Airports fall under DOT, or is landing strip space, is that considered facility?
And I'll defer to DOT, and at the end, when they're speaking, perhaps they can address that. I don't believe so, but we'll check with them.
And you may cover it later, but there's a question on, you know, how many of the facilities are like under 1,000 square feet, or how many, do we have some kind of a knowledge of how many are sheds or
sure.
vehicle storage?
Right. How do you conceptualize perhaps maybe a large count, but their overall square footage is relatively small? I don't have a slide on that. I have some kind of some ancillary data that I have brought with me, but nothing to put up on on the projector today. Yeah. Moving on to slide five. So we'll talk about our deferred maintenance totals now. For FY 2017, our statewide deferred maintenance total $1.84 billion. And this includes the deferred maintenance from the executive branch and the courts at $1.6 billion, and school district major maintenance projects submitted by school districts to the Department of Education at $240 million. Of that, there is a state share cost in that program of $165
million.
So is that based on the bonds that they could go out for? Or is that based on the rural schools or are the REAA schools in which we're responsible for most of it?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, there's a program called School District Participation in Grant Program in statute where school districts can apply to the state to fund new construction for schools, which is one side of this program. And then major maintenance or deferred maintenance projects, which is what we're talking about here. So it's not, you know, the state would grant them UGF typically, not, we wouldn't bond for that.
And follow up, Mr. Chairman?
Representative Wilson.
But I'm sure that the same group of projects that can be utilized by bonding out for communities as well. I mean, it used to be they came for the free money versus having to bond it. So do you have the difference, what it would be for the communities who could actually bond for the programs if they have to versus those that, again, that are REAA schools who don't have that bonding authority?
Through the chair, no, I don't have that information. I'd have to check with the Department of Education. But to your point that a school district could bond for a major maintenance project, they're not forced into participating in the state program.
And one more follow-up? Okay, so... But so doesn't it finally get to a point that the Department of Education would finally say that, I mean, if it's already, you know, I need a new roof and I can't get on this program, would we let them wait 5 or 10 years and keep on that program versus say you have that mechanism to bond for it and it would be less damage if you fix it now than if you wait 5 or 10 years? Is there any kind of check and balance how long they could stay on this list?
Through the chair, I'll defer to Department of Education. I'll get back to the committee. I'm not sure if the Department of Education has the power to force the school district to bond for something.
Mr. Chairman, they can't force them, but I would just hope that at a certain point they wouldn't be allowed on this list because they need to, because it's cost more money. So I know they can't force them to bond, but they can take them off the list.
And Representative Wilson, there is a major maintenance list in the state, and the school bond debt reimbursement, if members will remember, last year was like $120 million, and that wasn't all UGF. It was about 96 million of that was UGF. So there's some that comes from, I believe it was the Public School Trust that comes into part of that, and that was the bond debt reimbursement side. The grant portion is necessary for those that don't have bonding ability because they don't have municipal-owned buildings. And but also the schools that are municipalities can apply for those grants. They generally don't get them. They generally have to bond. But there are some circumstances in which the state does do grants for major maintenance within school districts, and so that's we can get more detail on that. But those are the numbers that came out last year because, as you'll remember, the governor vetoed 25% of the UGF was $30 million, I think it was, that was vetoed last year, which was 25% of the bond debt reimbursement that we were scheduled to do in last year's budget.
And Mr. Chairman, that's actually my point, is that there's some buildings that we are responsible for in the REAA areas, and then the municipalities, we help out when we can, or maybe the bonding comes back. I just want to make, you know, while we're kind of looking at our total responsibility, would that number shift if we had just the REAAs versus those that choose to be on the list for, and could possibly at some point bond for them? So it's just a distinction. Thank you.
Let's go ahead and go on then.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, our statewide deferred maintenance totals peaked in FY 2012 at $2.3 billion and have been reduced significantly since then due to a five-year investment into deferred maintenance through the capital budget. As we don't fund deferred maintenance consistently, we expect that our deferred maintenance backlog totals will start to increase. So quick graph, looking at our what makes up our total of deferred maintenance, the university is about 54% that statewide total. Transportation is at about 19%. Our school district major maintenance is another 13%. And then all other entities are grouped at 14%. So between our university system and our Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, we have about 75% of our $1.84 billion backlog is in those two entities. Slide 7 is another chart to look at our totals of deferred maintenance. You'll see the university there is at about $1 billion, followed by the Department of Transportation at $346.5. Slide 8 is a chart of historical funding that the legislature has provided for deferred maintenance and school district major maintenance. I have data going back to FY 1998 on deferred maintenance and back to 2005 for the school district major maintenance. The blue bars for statewide deferred maintenance and the red bars for school districts. So you'll see working left to right that funding is rather sporadic. It's not very consistent. And you'll see starting in 2009, quite a bit of money put into these two programs. And then FY11 through FY15, quite a bit of money there as a five-year initiative for deferred maintenance was implemented.
And was that the $100 million a year for 5 years?
Yes. So the prior administration had an initiative to fund deferred maintenance $100 million annually for 5 years in the capital budget. You'll see our figures exceed that kind of target by the administration. So the legislature appropriated more than that. So what we'll see with that kind of that rather five-year window of investment, we'll see a chart here in a couple slides that looks at how our deferred maintenance backlog has been reduced. But just a couple quick points on that chart on page 8. Funding was sporadic between 1998 and 2010. We had spikes of $53 million, $33 million, $127 million in certain years, and we had lows between 2000 and 2005 that averaged $6.5 million. So pretty large swings there. And then, Mr. Chairman, you already brought up the five-year initiative to address the deferred maintenance backlog. So slide 10 looks at what did the state get for that investment in deferred maintenance? It brought its backlog of deferred maintenance from $2.3 billion in 2012 to an estimate of $1.6 billion in FY17. So you'll notice on that funding chart previously that there's been a rapid decline in the amount of funding that's been appropriated for deferred maintenance in FY16 and 17. But our chart shows that we're still decreasing our overall backlog. And the main reason behind that is that not all of the money, when it's appropriated in a fiscal year, is consumed or spent in that same fiscal year. That it's very common for deferred maintence appropriation to be used over a number of fiscal years as agencies line up and plan to implement certain deferred maintenance projects by facility. So that's very typical of a, if we look back at this chart, kind of the spending pattern on deferred maintenance at an aggregate is very typical of what we're seeing in general with capital projects of the same time period. So there was a kind of a very rapid increase in the overall size of capital budgets. And it took our state, it took our partners, our entities time to ramp up and plan for all of that spending kind of all at once. So we're seeing those kind of carry forward declining each year, but not all funding is spent in the same year that it's appropriated. So I want to talk about two examples of deferred maintenance kind of management, one in the Department of Health and Social Services here on slide 11, and then the school district deferred or major maintenance on slide 12, to kind of give an idea of or an example of how departments implement a methodology for determining their deferred maintenance. How do they prioritize projects? How do they weigh them against each other to come up with their top priorities? So within the Department of Health and Social Services, they start off with an annual facility condition audit. So they get to see where are all their facilities, like what kind of condition they're in. They have a capital asset management system where they can track all of their projects that are ongoing or needed projects. So they have a way of keeping track of all of those kind of day to day, rather than doing an annual list once a year. And then within those projects that they log, they have a methodology of assigning them to certain categories, and these categories have a certain weight attached to them. So at the very end, they come up with a total for a project. The more points for a project, the higher a priority that project is. So they look at fire and life safety, security, building integrity, and code requirements, and mission efficiency. And then they apply a weight, whether for priorities, if they're high, medium, or low. They have a facilities condition index factor. So they look at how much deferred maintenance has built up on this facility versus what is its value. And then they have a factor for 24-hour facilities. So we have to think about the Department of Health and Social Services. They have a good mix of 24-hour facilities for Pioneer Homes, for juvenile justice, and they have the Psychiatric Institute in Anchorage, and they have a health lab. So they've come up with a way of looking at what facilities can we not afford to have a shutdown in with those 24-hour facilities. So I think that's a good kind of almost a microcosm of what we see at a statewide level, where departments may have an office space that's open from 8 to 5, and then you have some others where their facilities, they're maintaining and operating 24 hours a day. So this lets them kind of, this gives them a methodologies to where there's an objective way to rank projects against each other.
And can you redefine for me or give me the parameters of the facility condition index factor and how that factor applies or what it is?
Facilities condition index is kind of a quick calculation to see how much deferred maintenance on a facility or like a piece of equipment there is. Over the value of that facility. So if you've built up a lot of deferred maintenance on a building, then your value is going to be pretty high, or your facility's condition index. It just tells you the health of a facility relative to the other facilities that you have. So if you have an index that's very low and one that's very high, you may prioritize deferred maintenance towards the one that's higher. Just
Representative Gehr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just really quickly, that's how I guess the state ranks deferred maintenance needs. Does the university do it in the same way, or do we let the university use their own system?
Each entity has their own way. This is just health and social services.
Oh, I see.
Slide 12, Mr. Chairman, looks at school district major maintenance, and this is just a high-level kind of overview of how the Department of Education works with school districts to compile their major maintenance list. This is published annually. It ranges probably on average by 100 projects that are ranked on here, and so education has to figure out a way of taking all of the school district's proposals for this program and prioritize them so they can tell the legislature, you know, here's the highest priority project from our perspective, rather than having one priority for each school district. So the Department of Education actually has requirements for school districts that include a six-year district plan, a fixed asset inventory system, property loss insurance, a preventative maintenance and facilities management program that the Department of Education has certified. And then on applications that are sent to the department, they're evaluated on several factors, and a number of them I've listed here. A condition survey, the district's old rating or prioritized rating, a weighted average of the age of the facility. You see there at the bottom, emergency conditions or seriousness of life, safety, and code violations. So they look at a lot of factors. They assign essentially points to how these are rated. The more points overall a project has, the higher they'll be on an overall major maintenance listing. So two examples of taking priorities from different groups. This one looks at school districts. Every school district is going to have their priority. But what the Department of Education doesn't know is what one is the most urgent, or which one should be number one. And this is their methodology to determine that.
So this, these condition survey and district rating and all those are how they would rate, but that each district would have to have the eligibility requirements to even qualify for putting the project forward. Is that?
That's correct. So moving on to slide 13, kind of titled What We've Learned. Just a quick summary. Our pattern of funding deferred maintenance coincides in years where we've had high revenues, where we've had high capital budgets. The initiative between SLA 2010 and 2014 reversed the trend of growing deferred maintenance. Without a consistent level of funding, entities cannot effectively execute planned renewal, or this uncertainty in funding leads to emergency spending only. So they don't have that confidence to move forward with an obligation of funds this year on a project without having some certainty that if an emergent project comes up or an emergency arises, that they'll have an avenue to address that immediately. So you'll see hesitancy in spending those as the amount of funds they have dwindles. In the constrained fiscal environment we're in right now, our approach is to provide deferred maintenance attention to the highest priority needs across multiple agencies. And what we've proposed for FY18 are really those that are most critical to life, health, and safety only. So that kind of concludes my overview on deferred maintenance, and I would like to transition to folks on the line from Department of Transportation to talk about a statewide facilities maintenance initiative.
Okay, before we do that, let's see, should we go to general questions from this presentation while it's fresh? before we go into a kind of another topic. So Representative Wilson had a question.
Thank you. So on these buildings, what is it, do we have anything that shows how much capacity we have in each one of the buildings and how much of that is being utilized?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I think that's something we'll probably build through closely with this facilities maintenance overview that'll be given, but that's kind of independent of each entity's information.
Follow-up?
Follow-up, Representative Wilson.
I don't understand how that's separate, because I'll give you an example. So the Department of Education, is my understanding, they moved from one building here in Juneau, then moved over to the SLAM building. I'm assuming that they left their footprint empty in the building they moved from. So I don't know who maintains the building that they left, whether we owned that building, whether we rented that, but doesn't that have to be part of the discussion when we're looking at maintenance on how much our footprint is and how we can consolidate it, or who's who overall responsibility it is versus just each department?
Certainly through the chair, Representative Wilson, I think that's where we're trying to go as an administration is to look at a statewide facilities maintenance program so we can look at that more closely, because you're right, a lot of things are independent. Each agency kind of operates kind of on their own to some degree. Some facilities are managed by the Department of Administration on behalf of other state agencies. So there's quite a bit of overlap in that communication, but having a data set that's all-encompassing, I think, is what you were asking, or was my interpretation of your question, we don't have yet. So more of that is on surveys for departments, but there's no aggregate system that every department uses to track that information.
And a follow-up, Mr. Chairman?
Follow-up.
First of all, I think as a finance committee, we need to know that, because before we're putting more money into maintenance, I think we should know whether we should keep that building. But one other, and I know when I had the Department of Labor, they had a lot of leases as well as that they owned buildings. So has there been any analysis to, I mean, are we renting more areas than we're actually, that we have people in right now? Are we moving from leases to state-owned buildings, or is, again, that a department-by-department consideration?
So thank you. Through the chair, Representative Wilson, leases are managed by the Department of Administration. Our lease costs for the last decade and a half have been increasing year after year. So we started looking at that. How, you know, it wasn't a sustainable growth. So departments have been really good at negotiating leases that don't cost as much, eliminating leases and consolidating into other space, or eliminating programs that occupy the lease space completely. So we've brought down our lease space costs from a high in 2015 of roughly $49.6 million to a projected cost in FY17 of $47.1 million. Well, that puts us right in line with where we were in FY2012. Also in the Department of Administration, they have a leasing allocation, and there was a decrement of $2.8 million for FY18 in that component. And so we'll see further reductions into the future for FY18 and beyond to continually to drive down our lease costs overall for the state.
And a question for you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
So is it your intent, I mean, this is just, I mean, I'm kind of an overview of what we should have heard at the beginning of the year, but really for us to understand how much we may need to do in deferred maintenance, I think we need to have a better understanding of how many buildings we really even need to be occupying anymore as we've had a reduction. And again, I'd like to hear a little bit more about, you know, the area that the Department of Education left. Is that just empty? And the reason I say that is because every time I walk through the state building and I see the library, the older library that was maintained there, and it looked like people just kind of moved and left all their other stuff there. But it's a perfect example that we have a lot of room here that we're not utilizing, and are we renting instead, or can we consolidate and sell buildings? I just hope there's going to be a part two to this for more precise information.
Mr. Chairman, if I could address that briefly. The eighth floor of the SOB had some library staff from the Department of Education, and they did move to the new State Library and Archives Museum. Department of Education also had an old facility that was demolished, and they built a new facility in its place. And the Department of Administration, specifically for the lease space on the eighth floor, is working with multiple agencies to see who has the best fit in moving in there. So we're actively trying to fill that space to leave leased space and to come into our own space.
And we can ask the Department of Administration for, you know, kind of a rundown on that, because they're doing the same thing with the Atwood Building in Anchorage. You know, there was a space that was offered to various agencies to move out and cancel leased spaces. So I think that's going on around the entire administration, but some of that's by the department and some of it's Department of Administration. Sometimes we're into contracts where we, you know, but we will ask the Department of Administration for a report on that. I think they've got a report. We just haven't seen it yet. So, in fact, maybe you can coordinate with the Department of Administration.
Yes.
to get us that. Representative Guerra.
Thanks. I assume by this time in session, I'm hopeful that, well, we don't have a revenue plan yet. Many of us would like to have a revenue plan so we can get on top of things like deferred maintenance and put people back to work. Is there a list of buildings and the cost where if we don't do the deferred maintenance on those buildings, we're actually going to cost ourselves more money, like very soon? Buildings that are in such disrepair, the damage is being caused, that's costing us more, that if we were able to come up with a capital budget to address just those buildings, would you have a list like that?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, we could have put a list together like that. What we were asking for from departments of in our budget development this year were really to rate their highest needs in life, health, and safety only. And so we evaluated projects kind of with that scope. But we have a list by agency, one through as many projects that they have, and we can have them look at those different parameters to reprioritize.
Sort of a chicken and egg. It's hopefully we'll have the funds to do it, so I don't know whether to have you prepare that list. I'll leave that between you and the co-chairs. One other question through the chair is, I don't know if you know, you had the Department of Health and Human Service and Social Services slide up there. My understanding is the Bethel OCS office is in such disrepair, it's either, the word condemned was used to me. So it's a staff that's overburdened in the first place and now apparently dispersed throughout the community to make it less efficient. Do you know anything about that and what the plan is for that building?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Garrett, I'm not aware of that situation, but I can get into contact with the Department of Health and Social Services to on that.
I'm interested. Through the chair, I'm interested. Can somebody send me just either the committee or me an email just explaining what the plan is there?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'll address it immediately after this meeting.
Okay, thank you. Representative Pruitt.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and two very different questions, but one is continuing on the if you can't answer, and we're going to coordinate with DOA, and they may be better, then that's fine. But I'm trying to understand, in the same vein that the Representative Wilson is obviously we have 200 or 2,200 buildings, plus we also lease buildings, and I believe the administration has indicated several times over the course of this year that at least from they believe. And I can't tell you if it is because all the numbers just keep to go back and up. But there's fewer people working also for the state by potentially thousands. Have we gone through within the last couple years, have we gone through a reevaluation of the need, not just in terms of the owned buildings, but in terms of the leased buildings and the overall need that we currently may find ourselves in? Has that been done, or is that something I should wait for DOA to ask them?
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, is that in context of deferred maintenance, like the backlog that we have with those facilities?
Can I follow up,
Mr.
Because of the fact that we own these buildings and the fact that we're leasing, if we're paying for, if we could lower the cost of, say, leasing, and I'm not dictating without all the details of exactly how the administration operates this, but if we were to lower the cost in leasing, that might open up opportunity to invest some of that money into deferred maintenance or, you know, something that allows for, because I think the concern is that we've got a large budget, we're trying to find money for deferred maintenance, and this is just one of the discussions about becoming more efficient in different areas that might open up the opportunity for deferred maintenance. So, I mean, have we found ways to be efficient in other areas that open up that opportunity for potentially looking at other ways to potentially use that money, including DM?
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, the cost of being in a facility in terms of like rent, whether we're paying that to DOA or you're paying that to the lessor, is an operating cost. And so deferred maintenance we've really addressed through the capital budget. So if you have a savings in a lease, you'd show a negative in operating. Doesn't automatically go into, that savings doesn't automatically equate to an appropriation for deferred maintenance, but it creates an opportunity to have lower costs or net zero costs. So I think there's not a mechanism where you would automatically see a lower lease cost or a lower operations cost that turns into an ability to address a deferred maintenance project unless it can be used from the same budget. DOA, with their public building fund, actually builds in deferred maintenance, the cost of deferred maintenance into the facilities that they manage through that program. And so you'll see in the capital budget when it comes up, there's a fund source that's called Public Building Fund. And we're funding projects from that fund to make improvements to those facilities. And the departments pay for it through their annual rate to the Department of Administration. So there's not a upfront UGF cost in the capital budget, but it's borne by the operating budgets of those agencies that are paying rent, so to speak, to the Department of Administration. So that, in concept, there is something like that in place, somewhat.
So I'm trying to clarify the question.
Go ahead.
That you're asking. It could be, I was interpreting it two ways. One, were you asking, are we negotiating contracts for lower lease space? And the other is, are we getting out of lease space to go into buildings that we own? And so I wasn't sure which one of those two questions you were asking.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the quest for clarification. I'm trying to make sure that we have the correct amount of space for the needs of the state, I guess is the. So I think there was a question. I think there was a discussion earlier that was maybe about reduction of lease, and I applaud DOA where they're able to do that. But are we also potentially looking at area or potentially looking at situations where we may not need certain space, or we might be able to utilize certain space different in a manner where we might be able to lower costs, therefore maybe even leaving us where we don't have certain costs associated with a facility because maybe we've determined maybe we may not need that facility and we can look at selling it. I think it's an overall management problem because I think, and this was the second question I was going to ask, is it's in here, but it's I look at the university, for example, and they have a very large amount.
Before we go on to that,
yeah.
Let's get to the first question here.
So okay, no problem.
That answered, and I think I didn't quite get all. I think you said that our lease space was 49.6, and then it came down to 47.1, so reduced the lease cost. That's obviously by either renegotiating or getting rid of lease space. And then for the 2018 budget is $2.8 million less appropriated for leasing. So that's a further reduction. Was that, were those the figures that you had, and was that by renegotiating or getting out of some of the leases and going into buildings we own?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, those were the numbers. And it is a combination of those. So we've done away with leases and brought people into other state-owned facilities. We've gotten rid of leases and gotten rid of programs at the same time. We have renegotiated lease costs. As an expired lease comes up, we'll negotiate a lower price. And we've also done kind of mid-lease adjustments to lower our costs for those as well. So all of that kind of goes into that decrement of $2.8 million that you'll see in the operating budget for 18. And the overall net savings of square footage is about 184,000 square feet.
Less square footage than we had previously.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Representative
Pruitt,
did you want to?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I really appreciate from both of you this conversation, trying to understand the dynamics here. So the next question, and it's similar but different, but, you know, the university, looking through this, has the largest, obviously, square footage. Therefore, it makes sense they have the largest deferred maintenance. I guess my question is, I know the administration is limited in their ability to have that conversation related to the university. And so if that's something we need to ask the university, please tell me. But I'm trying to, is there such a separation from capital budget items that there's not a thought process in terms of the budget to consider those things? So I'm thinking, when I went to school there at UAA, they twice remodeled the commons in the 4 years that I was there. But it sounds like that even when I was going to school there, there was additional deferred maintenance that was probably building up over time. Is there a correlation between the operations and the capital? I guess I'm concerned that there's not a management of the deferred maintenance, and we just set it aside, and instead of investing now in some of those things that can bring the cost down, it's not in the operations in some capacity. I'm trying to understand the management. How are we managing these facilities for the long term?
Sure, Representative, or through the chair, Representative Pruitt. I don't have experience working in the university, so I don't want to speak for them or their management decisions. I don't feel that there's a disconnect between capital and what's in a facilities maintenance operations budget. I think the same people that identify deferred maintenance projects are those facilities maintenance workers that are doing the day-to-day work in those facilities. So I don't know if I'd generalize that they have a disconnect between the two. But for what's being, what is the decision making for maintaining our facilities, I think we're pretty aligned, but we're independent of each other. And so that's kind of the direction that the administration wants to go first. And then kind of have those underlying discussions as we progress.
So, and just one more follow-up on that, and I appreciate this, Mr. Chair. So let's use, like, if there's a sprinkler system that is still working, but it's aged. There's a desire to, there's we're going to need to replace this. Mm-hmm. Will an entity go ahead and continue to keep that running, even if it costs more than what might be considered preventive maintenance, the normal annual maintenance, repair a sprinkler head or two? Will they do additional on that while waiting for the deferred maintenance to potentially come through? Is that something they just – there's not a point where they just say, we're not even going to work on this because it's at a point where it just needs to be replaced. They'll do what they need to do to keep that going.
Mr. Chairman, that's a good example, yes. You know, sprinkler system's probably like a code violation if you don't maintain that, and so you can't occupy the facility if the fire department said it wasn't up to code. But there are probably facilities where the deferred maintenance far exceeds the value of that facility. So in terms of do we fund a project for this facility for its deferred maintenance, or you know, is that a loss overall to us? Is there better value for demolishing the facility? That's another good consideration to have for those. So I think we've been spending the deferred maintenance money very well, given our drop in deferred maintenance backlog. And those are considerations about how much deferred maintenance is here and what's critical to keep the life of this building going, and what is maybe a sunk cost that will never recuperate with the value of this facility.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, and I just remember that, you know, most of the deferred maintenance, the small ordinary maintenance gets done placing the sprinkler head, but if you have more than that, probably going to have to be the legislature that appropriates money or not for that deferred maintenance, then it becomes deferred maintenance. We do not appropriate money for that. And obviously after the $100 million for 5 years, you know, that is winding down rapidly. There's probably a little bit of that money left in projects, but after that, the question is, and that's what we'll be looking at in the capital budget when it comes up, as to whether we're going to invest in deferred maintenance or whether in the fiscal climate we are, we're going to not invest in deferred maintenance and defer it further. And that's one of the questions that we've been asking. If you don't have a comprehensive fiscal plan and you are planning on having $500 million of deficit every year, do you do deferred maintenance when you have $500 million of deficit? And that's one of the questions that we've been asking, because we think that we need a fiscal plan that actually funds a capital budget and deferred maintenance instead of deferring it further and increasing costs in the future. So that's one of the questions that we have before us in this session of the legislature. Representative Wilson.
Just on that point in that discussion, so then if it's decided that we don't need the buildings, you know, anymore, does that come back here, or is that a decision the department makes that says, you know, looking in the future, this is going to take a lot more upkeep, you can kind of tell, you know, maybe leases are going to come. Sometimes it's smarter to lease versus to own. I mean, that's kind of the comparison I was talking about. But when someone decides that, is that just something that the administration chooses to do when they sell it, or do they have to come back to the legislature in any kind of format? Pretty sure they could just sell it on themselves. Sell it themselves, I'm just not sure.
And we'll get that answer.
Thank you.
Representative Guerra?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, I don't know if we need a hearing on that. That's a Department of Administration question, really. I mean,
hearing was just a question.
And but I'm sure the commissioner would be willing to talk about it. It's not so easy. You lay off a bunch of people 1 year, but you have a 5-year lease. Do you? It's about probably worth questioning the commissioner. It's not so easy to move out of a building every single time you cut 10 or 20 employees, though.
Mr. Chairman, first of all, I wasn't asking for a hearing. I'm really trying to understand the presentation that we're talking about. And the university being with 400 buildings, I think everybody knows there's not going to be a time for a long time that 400 buildings may be how many they need. Depending on what size and what all counts as a building, you know, on that portion of it. But back here, when we're looking at having a limited amount of deferred maintenance monies, I think the other part of the discussion we don't have in this presentation is there a time where one or two things, is it smarter to have a lease because somebody else has to take care of the major maintenance, or is there a point where you shift people because that building's eating too much of energy, or the it's old and it's going to have asbestos and all those kinds of things. I'm just wondering where those discussions come from, because sometimes I hear it's the Department of Administration. We know the university does their own. And then I know for the Department of Labor, a lot of those buildings that they had themselves or had the leases within the department. So it's back to, we have a lot of silos. I was just trying to figure out whose responsibility is to make that call, so we're not dumping money into things that we may not need to at this time.
And I think the consolidation that we've seen in buildings and the lowering of the leasing costs because we are leasing less space, all of those things will come there. And we can talk to the Department of Administration and get a follow-up on that. Maybe we're at the point of going on to the next slides and the presenters, or is there anything further that people want to ask here? Do you want to introduce the other folks that are going to talk about your slides?
Sure, Mr. Chairman. So on the line we have from the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, Mark Davis and Chris Hodgins, and they'll talk about our statewide facilities maintenance initiative.
If you're online, would you go ahead, Mark, and introduce yourself?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mark Davis. I'm the director for the new statewide facilities services division, and with me is Chris Hodgins, and he is our project manager for that same organization.
Thank you. We have a slide up, slide 14, and so go ahead and start.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The effort that we are working on at this point is to centralize the facilities maintenance for the state facilities, and that goes across most of the departments. The effort began back in 2017 with the starting of a governance body called the FMAC, and that's essentially at the deputy commissioner level. And then that further matured to have a state facilities council, more of a worker level, and then there's also subcommittees of that. So this governance body has done a great deal of work to analyze the problem, analyze the potential advantages to centralizing the facilities maintenance across the state. So that effort culminated on the 28th of February, where a determination was made that the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities would be the lead agency to implement a plan to start that centralization of the facilities maintenance across the state facilities. So that that plan is beginning now with a pilot of about 20 of the buildings in the Juneau area. And the things that we think we're going to see as financially beneficial is just the taking an enterprise approach, finding the economies of scale, consolidating where it makes sense the numerous contracts associated with facilities maintenance, and so as we go forward with the Juneau pilot, we're working on the first wave of that Juneau pilot now. The governance body will continue to be consulted, will continue to make the key policy decisions for us as we go through this. I would like to say that the scope of this effort does not include leasing of facilities. That remains with the Department of Administration. And the question about, or the comments about consolidating work and consolidating facilities, perhaps closing facilities or no longer renting facilities, that is also out of the scope of what we're working on here. So I'm moving to slide 15. We talked earlier about the facilities condition index, and in terms of this new organization, that will be very important for us to really get a understanding of the status of our buildings across the state. The Department of Health and Social Services did conduct a facilities condition index survey of their facilities, but we don't know of any other department that has done that. So that'll be an important step for us to understand the level of deferred maintenance, the impact of the age of the facilities. So we kind of put all of the facilities on one metric where we can understand what the problem set is and start to determine how we would prioritize funding. And as we go forward through the waves of the Juno pilot, we will use that to learn lessons, kind of adjust our procedures, and make this more efficient as we go forward. So moving to slide 16, we've looked across other states to understand how they operate with facilities maintenance. The state of Utah is a good example. I think they've had consolidated state facilities maintenance since the mid-1980s, and most of their policy is in statute at this point. I know that, for example, they have a statute where their deferred maintenance funding is a percentage of the value of the facilities, and that percentage is funded each year, so it's very predictable. Moving to slide 17, or I'm sorry. Moving to slide 17. So so we're looking to, again, build successes on the Juno pilot and then extend the program across the rest of the state. We want to advance in waves for all the rest of the facilities, and then be able to develop metrics where we can report the savings to our investors, stakeholders. And a key component of that is putting all of the facilities maintenance in a common computerized maintenance management software system. Currently, some departments don't have any maintenance management system at all. Some have maintenance management systems that are inadequate. But really, for us to implement this, it'll be key that we bring all of the facilities managed in the same computerized maintenance management system. And with that, we'll be able to show the metrics and really understand where we can gain efficiencies in the system. So if there's any questions, we're ready to take those questions now.
Are there questions? I guess one of the things with the facility conditions indices, there was a question of when a facility gets to be no longer worth the major maintenance that would have to be done. Is that, sometimes we talk about doing the worst ones first, but is there a situation here where there's a cutoff where the facilities index says don't do it?
Mr. Chair, that's a great question. Once we're able to get those facility index surveys completed, I think a decision like that would be something that we would bring to the Facilities Council and perhaps even to the FMAC for a decision. That would require a lot of planning to move whatever function is in that building to different buildings, and then ensure that there's capital funding for replacement if that's necessary.
Looking at this schedule, like with Utah, where it's automatically put forward a percentage of the building cost to make this system work, if we are, if we don't have some dedicated funding or some indicated funding going forward, because we're running deficits, does this system give us information but not actually put us on the pathway to getting the repairs done?
Mr. Chairman, I think it's important that we use, once we get operating and we're able to see the full picture of the buildings that we're managing through our metrics and our costing capabilities in a computerized maintenance management system, we would be able to determine what we think the deferred maintenance funding should be. There's probably a number of the 2,000 plus buildings that are very small buildings, storage sheds or buildings that wouldn't have a lot of deferred maintenance. There's probably some old buildings out there that we currently just are underestimating what their deferred maintenance costs would be. So at this point, we're not really able to answer the amount of deferred maintenance we would need. I think the figure that OMB has come up with is as good as any. And then just based on the funding that's available through legislative appropriations is what we would have to manage. So we would manage that based on the prioritization from the facilities condition index.
And you mentioned the smaller buildings. Is there a list of how many buildings we have that are under 1,000 square feet or some category like that, so that they're small? Small buildings instead of the, I mean, it's hard to compare the engineering building at the University of Alaska to a storage shed. So on numbers, is there some kind of a list that at least has a minimal size where we're looking at in the cost estimates as well?
Mr. Chairman, that is something that we can put together. I don't think we have that product, but I believe we have the data to put that together and forward that.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, that would be helpful for our understanding of what some of these things are. And is there a cost to the Juno pilot project here? Implementation? Is there software costs? Is there something that or has that been funded in the past, or is that something that we're absorbing or using other equipment for?
Mr. Chairman, the major cost that we are looking to fund at this point is for the computerized maintenance management system. So that that is in the decision making stage. We're putting together a request for proposal for that. Our estimates for that are somewhere around $350,000 to $450,000, and we are still identifying funding for that.
And is that $350,000 to $400,000? Is that the software and the infrastructure, or is that the studies? Sorry, I just have to make that clarification.
Of my understanding, that's the software and the implementation of that.
Thank you. Representative Guerra had a question.
Thanks. Maybe I'm just trying to find out if you're the right person. So are there, do we know that there are buildings out there that need to be maintained, that as we wait, we're causing sort of significant damage that we're going to have to pay for by not doing the deferred maintenance, right? The two classes of maintenance, buildings we need to maintain, buildings that we need to maintain because it's costing us in terms of damage that's occurring right now.
Through the chair to Representative Guerra, I couldn't answer that question. We're at the very beginning of implementing this program. For right now, we're working just with the first wave, and that's primarily DOA and DOT. So I would imagine there may be some buildings that don't have deferred maintenance funding, but I'm not at the position to say that categorically.
All right, thanks.
I guess I had one question. We have one more slide 18. And is that the governor's 10-year plan, is that looking at the pilot project, or is that looking at a deferred maintenance statewide plan?
Mr. Chairman, this is Adam Bryan from OMB. Slide 18 is kind of my wrap-up slide. It's not specific to the slides that Mark was discussing on 16 and 17. But the 10-year plan is more of to kind of put into context where we had an estimate in there at the start of session using between 70 and 90 million between kind of entity deferred maintenance and school district major maintenance, just to kind of give you an idea if you're familiar with the 10-year plan. But it's independent of the statewide facilities maintenance.
Okay, I'm going to clarify that a little bit here in the presentation. So basically something like the previous administration, $100 million five-year plan, this is $70 and $90 million for a 10-year plan is the thumbnail
yes.
estimate at this point. Are there other questions? Well, I think that we can see we have a deferred maintenance problem in the state. $1.6 billion is not chump change by any means, and it's probably growing, especially with running out of the past $100 million was there. We have some considerations to make and to figure out how we're going to get there. And again, I think we need to look to see what kind of a ongoing budget we're going to have, but whether we're going to have deficits, which is meaning we're probably not going to be funding deferred maintenance any significant amount, or if we're going to have a plan that comes forward and actually balances our budget. So if there are no further questions, that will be today, and the next regularly scheduled House Finance Committee meeting is tomorrow on Tuesday, and at that meeting we will hear HB 150, the pay allowances benefits for militia members bill, HB 124, the benefit corporation bill, which we heard before, HB 142, unemployment compensation benefits bill, and HB 74, the driver's license ID cards and Real ID Act bill, which we've heard before and which for which amendments were already due. We have some amendments we'll be considering on that. Representative Wilson.
Can you tell me which one of those that we're having public comment on? I know we've had some of those presented, and I know we had comment on the Real ID Act, but I don't remember having public comment on the other three. It's been a while since we've heard from them, so I just was trying to verify.
Right, and I don't have that here, so... and the staff that would know that isn't here. So if it's an initial hearing, it won't be a public hearing on that. So if we haven't heard any of those that we have heard, I don't know, we'd have to look on the schedule and find out, but it should be listed on the schedule if it's going to be a public hearing.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's not listed, and if we could do it for the whole week, because some of those bills we heard, like briefly, because we had other issues that were going on, and I know we just got them kind of, you know, on there, but most of those this week, I don't think we've had public hearing. I don't know each and every one of them, but if we could kind of, get a list for the whole week so that we can let our constituents know that we're going to have public testimony on those in case they still want to be able to weigh in. Thank you.
We'll do that. Anything further? Seeing nothing else, it is 2:47 and we're adjourned.